Good evening, everyone. I want to welcome everyone, each of you, to the Monday, October 15th meeting of your Ferndale City Council. I'd like to invite everyone to rise as we salute our flag, and our council member, Greg Hanson, will lead us tonight.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. And our city clerk, Susan Duncan, will conduct the roll call.
Council members are here. Council member Greg Hanson.
Here.
Council member Olson.
Here.
Council member Taylor.
Here.
Council member Watson.
Here.
Council member Kate Hanson.
Here.
Council member Kennedy.
Here.
Everybody's here. Thank you very much. We go on now to public comment. This is the time in our meeting where we invite the public to speak to your city council on items that are not on the agenda tonight. We are happy to give you 3 minutes. All you got to do is walk up to the front, tell us who you are, where you live, and we will listen to you. So, looks like no takers tonight. That's fine. We will close the public comment. Council, we're on to item B, which is a consent agenda, and what is your pleasure?
Move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Moved by Councilmember Greg Hanson and seconded by Councilmember Taylor to adopt the consent agenda. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed nay, and the agenda consent agenda has been adopted. Going on to item C, which I would call the main event tonight, is recognition of Judge Terry Lewis and his service to our city. I'd like to invite you and Margo to come up to the front. And Chief, would it come up too? Come over here and I can speak into the mic on here. We are glad that you have graced us and blessed us tonight. I got a little cheat sheet here which says that you have served us for 17 years, but your career is a lot longer than that. It says in here that you were a piano mover.
That's right.
Why did I not know this? I have moved many pianos.
Oh, well, I'm not so sure that was a good thing to let everyone know. I imagine some folks have pianos and want to move.
They're not easy to move. It says, am I pronouncing it Filipino or Filipino stick fighting?
Oh, yes. I do that with my friend Dave McEachran. We do that every Sunday. Very good at all.
Well, it says here you're an expert at hand-to-hand defense. Can you do a demonstration tonight? This is so interesting to me.
I better stick to just telling a few stories.
He says you've been a dishwasher. You must have some dishwashing stories for us, perhaps.
You know, that was my first, over my 55-year working career. I've done a number of things, including, as you mentioned, washing dishes, driving truck, moving pianos, and I can just say that they prepared me well for 45 years of marriage to my wonderful wife.
45 years.
Especially the dishwasher. That has certainly come in handy, and I've also moved a few pianos
in my time.
And so those varied careers have served me well.
Deputy prosecutor and a judge, and many of us here have sat in court on a Thursday or Friday, and I've so enjoyed it. Clearly, you love what you do. You have a compassionate heart, but a fair heart. And I think people who've come in here, whether they're defendants or whatever, have been well cared for. And we appreciate that. We have something for you. First is the famous city coins. We purchased about 6,000 of these centennial coins about 100 years ago, I think. But we reserved those for special occasions.
Fine.
Yes, they're quite lovely.
Very thoughtful. Oh, it's beautiful.
There you go. There you go, and very special people get those. And then a plaque, which I'm going to read to you, says presented to Terrence G. Lewis, and G stands for?
George
Lewis, in recognition of 17 years of service as a Ferndale Municipal Court judge. Thank you, and congratulations very much. And I think the chief has something to say.
Oh, my, thank you.
Judge, we wanted to give you a honorary police officer title. I'll read this. I better come.
So it says Terrence G. Lewis, the Honorable Judge, City of Ferndale, Washington, 2002 to 2018, is hereby appointed as an honorary police officer with the City of the Ferndale Police Department, with all rights and privileges thereto appertaining. In recognition of an exceptional judicial career, the City of Ferndale honors and thanks Judge Terrence Lewis not only for his dedication to providing sound advice to the officers of this department, but also for his dedication to the administration of justice and for the fair, compassionate, and professional way he treated all the citizens of the city of Ferndale.
Oh, gee, thank you. These are beautiful and obviously very...
I think that means you get a free ride in the MRAP.
Well, I look forward to that. You know, I obviously appreciate the recognition, Mayor and Chief, and so I'll try not to get emotional. It's been 17 years and a wonderful 17 years, and I've really enjoyed the entire time. And so I want to thank you and thank the council members for this chance to briefly speak with you. I'll try to keep it brief. I know you're busy, but I would like to address you and thank you. I want to especially thank all of you, Mayor, the police, council. I want to thank you, and I'm gonna stick to my notes pretty much because I don't want to forget anything, and that's also more likely to keep it short. Thank you for supporting our Ferndale Municipal Court for all of these years. I think that we all certainly share the same common goal of making a great community even better, even safer, and that's what we try to do in our Ferndale Municipal Court. 17 years ago, when I applied to be your Ferndale judge, I submitted my resume and I answered the following written question. What role should Ferndale Municipal Court play in our community? I answered, municipal courts are where justice is dispensed. Justice requires that victims of crime be protected, while at the same time, the rights of the accused be observed. And over the years, I've tried my very best to keep that balance. Local courts, like Ferndale Municipal Court, are where most people see justice administered. Most people never see the inside of Superior Court, the bigger courts. But in Ferndale Municipal Court, we see everything from traffic infractions, something minor like traffic infractions, to much more serious cases, DUIs, driving under the influence, and domestic violence cases. So we see a host of different cases, and this is where, if anybody's going to be in court, it's more likely to be in a small town justice court like Ferndale. And so I have really been very fortunate over the past 17 years to have had an awful lot of help. And some of these folks that have helped me so much and whose opinions and thoughtfulness I have really been grateful for have helped me very much over the years. And I'm extremely grateful to have had the opportunity to work as a team with many of the people behind you for the last 17 years. I just want to tell you about some of them. The past few years, I've worked with our court services manager, Faith Miller, and our court clerk, Janice Neer. I can simply say about both of them that they are the gold standard. And that's not the least bit of an exaggeration. They are smart, polite, patient, and dedicated. And Ferndale is very lucky to have them as employees. I certainly have been very fortunate to work with them. With Faith, you get an addition. With Faith, you also get her husband, Bart. Bart routinely comes to court, and when we have jury trials, Bart serves as our bailiff and does an outstanding job. All of this without compensation, I might add. He does this voluntarily, and although Faith may have something to do with him being here voluntarily. But my gosh, I feel very proud to call Bart Miller my friend. Yeah, you know, and I got to see her today. I got to see Shirley Zimmerman, who I know most of you know. Shirley Zimmerman, before Faith and Janice, was our court services manager for many years. And she was such an outstanding employee, so dedicated and hardworking that Shirley set the bar very high for all of those who followed her. And I was just so glad that I could see her at our reception earlier today. And she and her husband, Bill, seem to be really enjoying retirement, and they do a lot of babysitting for their grandkids. So it was really, really nice to see them. I want to tell you a little bit about Todd Anderson. Todd Anderson, as you know, is our Ferndale probation officer. And we are so fortunate, it's so important that we have Todd Anderson as Ferndale Court's probation officer. Todd is, without any doubt, one of the very best probation officers that you'll find anywhere. He's just outstanding. It's a very tough job. Todd deals with the most difficult offenders. He's smart and patient, and he is absolutely determined. He's absolutely determined to change behavior, to change lives. And he does that through the structure of probation while he monitors the treatment programs that DUI offenders and domestic violence offenders go through. And he is so doggone patient and determined. It's an inspiration. I can tell you that as a judge, I visit with other judges about this, it's easy at times to get a little bit cynical about things. We often see the same people over and over. But Todd keeps me optimistic. He keeps me optimistic through his determination. We have seen so many success stories through probation. He changes lives, he saves lives, and has changed many lives for the better. He works with both the offenders and their families to make Ferndale a much better community. And so I will miss working with Todd. Our Ferndale prosecutor, Dave Nelson, is an outstanding professional. He and our public defender, Tom Lydon, although they work from different directions, public defenders and prosecutors don't always see eye to eye, and they work from different directions. But for the most part, they find common ground. They resolve most cases for the betterment of Tom's clients and the betterment of the community. So I'll miss working with them from day to day. I'd like to also acknowledge our incredible domestic violence victim advocate, Carol Donovan. Carol Donovan is so special. She is so smart that she's invaluable. She provides support and resources and goodwill and direction for victims of domestic violence at the most difficult times in their lives. And these are very challenging cases, very difficult. Carol is so dedicated and so smart, and she's able to come up with solutions, practical solutions, that really affect the lives of the most vulnerable. So we haven't always had her, but when we were able to luckily have her services some years ago, it's just shown us how important it is that we have someone who's dedicated and good at what she does, because she changes many lives for the better. I want to also acknowledge and thank Chief Turner, who was so thoughtful just to be here. I just noticed that when they relaxed the rule about facial hair, everybody on the police department now has a beard, I think. And so they're all good looking. I don't know if they're trying to look like me or that's just a coincidence or exactly how that is. I'm going to assume that they're trying to look more like me, which probably is a completely false assumption. Chief Turner's lieutenants and his sergeants and all of the officers that worked for him
so loyal and dedicated and smart, and they do just really an incredible job providing security, safety for our courtroom. They transport prisoners. They are just ready for anything, and they provided training for us a number of times. And so Justin Pike is back. He's right here. They provided some courtroom security training for us not too many months ago that was just so helpful and valuable. It makes you think about every minute that, you know, you have to be careful. Something strange could happen. The staff, Chief Turner's staff, Kim Martin, has been delightful and wonderful to work with. I've done a lot of property forfeiture cases with her. She's just so dedicated. It's incredible. We have volunteers now. We have, I don't know if you're familiar with the SCOPE volunteers. Do you know who they are, the SCOPE volunteers? These are retired people like me, or you know, soon enough, and almost as old. But they are retired folks, men and women, who volunteer their time to come to court on Friday and provide us with security. Greater courtroom security was mandated about a year or so ago by our Washington State Supreme Court under something called General Rule 36. We're mandated to take steps to make sure that all the folks that come to court, not just the officers of the court, but all the people, the public who come to court are safe, because courts can be a vulnerable place. And so Lieutenant Huffman and Lieutenant Hatchett and the chief, they quickly stepped up and along with the SCOPE volunteers and provided us with a sense of security that makes us all feel so much more comfortable. And so it's just been great to see how efficient and quick to respond to needs that the police department provides. I also want to thank, and I saw him at the reception. I'm always, you know, it always just inspires me when I see our former chief, Mike Knapp, who you know and all, I'm sure. And he is someone who you don't just have to be a police officer to be inspired by Mike Knapp. He's just an incredible person. If some of you know, are lucky enough to have known all the things he's done. He's an FBI agent for 30 years. You know, he's done many, many things, all modest, with a modest appreciation of how life works. He's a remarkable guy, and so I was, he certainly has set the standard for excellence very high for all the police officers who have served under him and come later. So, I told you I'd try to be short. Is that short enough? You know, my wife told me. I was almost going to read a couple of my favorite police reports. They're very short. They're only like a half a page. When I was sorting through my stuff and throwing things away, I thought, you know, other people, this is just going to get shredded someday, and without hearing, do we have enough time for me to share a couple of very, I guarantee they're short. All right, good. Thank you. I'm not used to being on this side of the podium, so okay, I got to tell you, this is at the risk of my wife not speaking to me on the way home, but I'm gonna change the names to protect the guilty. And I'll be brief again. This is a report from a few years ago, and I'll paraphrase it. On June 17, 2009, at about 2:51 hours, Ferndale police officers were dispatched to a domestic dispute between brother and sister at such and such a place in the city of Ferndale. Jack reported to dispatch that his sister Jill had kicked him in the head. Not a good thing. Officer Spaney and Grant, I haven't changed their names, responded and contacted the parties involved. The officers contacted Jack, who stated that He went with his sister Jill and their friend back home after leaving the bar. Jill and the friend were hanging together in Jill's room, and Jack started to complain to Jill because her parrot was making too much noise. Jill came out of her room and was upset at Jack. He was sitting on a chair in the dining room, and Jill kicked him in the head. Jack had two scratches about 1 inch long in his forehead. Officers tried to talk to Jill, but she was uncooperative and tried to walk into the house, would not provide any information. She was arrested for assault, fourth-degree domestic violence. Both had been drinking considerably and were intoxicated. So that's no one got hurt, fortunately. We see much, much more serious domestic violence cases. But that was one that stood out for me because I've never had a parrot case before. That's my first and only parrot case. So one other very quick one, if you don't mind. This one is one that is one of my favorites. On October 18th, at approximately 2:20 a.m., Ferndale officer observed a vehicle with a Washington license plate. The vehicle was stopped facing westward on 2nd Avenue on Main Street. The vehicle did not have its headlights on. It appeared that only the parking lights were illuminated. It was dark this time of morning. The vehicle turned onto Main Street. Officer followed the vehicle onto Main Street and activated his emergency overhead lights just prior to the Nooksack River Bridge. The vehicle continued to drive until it crossed the bridge and pulled into the parking lot at Natural Way Chiropractic. Officer contacted the driver of the car, Bruno. The vehicle also had expired tabs. As the officer approached the driver's side window, he noticed that the vehicle did not have a steering wheel. It appeared that the vehicle was being driven with a pair of pliers. A check on Bruno's driving record showed that he was suspended. Officer contacted the driver, contacted Bruno, who identified himself, and the officer noted that Bruno had a pretty strong odor of intoxicants. The officer asked Bruno to step out of the car. Bruno could not get out of the driver's side door because it was damaged. He had to scoot across the seat and get out the passenger side. When Bruno exited the car, it was clear to the officer that he might have to call for backup because Bruno was a giant man, very large. On the other hand, Bruno was very cooperative. The officer said, "Bruno, I can smell alcohol on your breath. Have you been drinking?" Bruno immediately replied, "Drinking? Alcohol? No, no alcohol, just beer." Anyway, Bruno did not do well at all on the field sobriety test. He took a breathalyzer, portable breathalyzer at the scene, and had a reading of 0.15. Bruno was transported to the Ferndale Police Department, and a breathalyzer was given with approximately the same result. Anyway, you may wonder, why is someone, that's also, in addition to the parrot, I've never had anyone that was driving without a steering wheel. Bruno was actually on probation in another court, and he'd had his car club. He had the steering wheel club. But Bruno, being an industrious fellow that he was, he took the club off, and in doing so, he took the steering wheel off also. Had a pair of pliers so he could drive. To this day, I'm pretty sure that Bruno only thinks that he should have had his headlights on that night. But anyway, that's... Those are kind of funny. We see many, many stories, most of which are not funny. They're very serious, but somehow that struck my funny bone, and so I thought I would share this with you. And again, I just want to say thank you all for being so committed to serving the community. I know how hard this is, and thank you very much.
Justice.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Come around sometime.
All right, I will. I definitely will. Thank you, Mayor.
Thanks, folks.
Well, that was actually a very nice segue into the next item, which is item D. And, counsel, I know that this particular issue of domestic violence, if it doesn't impact you personally or has impacted you personally, certainly people that we love have been impacted by this. So it's my responsibility and pleasure to read this statement. Domestic Violence Awareness Month Proclamation. And it goes like this. Whereas the family is the foundation of a safe, healthy, and thriving community, whereas everyone has the right to be safe and have the opportunity to live and thrive without fear, whereas the highest priority of government is the safety of its citizens, whereas the problem of domestic violence affects citizens crossing all racial, social, religious, ethnic, geographic, and economic groups, whereas the Ferndale Police Department received 204 domestic calls in 2016 alone, and whereas domestic violence is a growing challenge in Whatcom County with 18 fatalities attributed to domestic violence in Whatcom County over the last 10 years, whereas domestic violence impacts men and women, children and adults, affluent and poor, whereas one in three Americans have witnessed an incident of domestic violence, and whereas the estimated annual cost to U.S. companies and the American economy is some $3.5 billion each year in lost work time, increased health care costs, higher turnover, and lower productivity, and whereas the cost to society and additional law enforcement, government and non-government victim support and advocacy groups, and criminal justice is in the untold billions of dollars, and whereas the shame, guilt, and lasting damage and injury done to both victims and offenders too often remains hidden in the shadows, and whereas the city seeks to arrest in its infancy bullying, hate, violence, and intimidation of all kind, and whereas it is the goal of this administration to see Ferndale become a domestic violence-free city, now therefore in recognition of the impact domestic violence has on the health and well-being of our whole community, I, John Mutcher, Mayor of the City of Ferndale, do proclaim October 2018 as Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Further, I reaffirm the commitment of the City of Ferndale to take action on this growing issue and work with our friends, neighbors, family members, community leaders, and domestic violence services partners like BWCCADV to ensure everyone can live free from the fear of violence and know that all victims of domestic violence have the right to be heard. John Mutchler, and thank you very much. That's it for that. Moving on to private developments update. Haley Miller, it's your turn.
Good evening, City Council and Mr. Mayor. My name is Haley Miller, and I'm bringing forward to you your monthly update on private development projects that are occurring around our city.
He's very excited.
So these are the three projects I've selected to bring to you today. They're all commercial developments. There's two in the LeBounty area and then one close to our downtown core. So the first project is Pape. This is a commercial business that specializes in selling semi-trucks, and they also offer repair services and they lease large equipment. So this will be located on the west side of LeBounty within the proposed Pacific Fern Business Park. I showed you guys a specific binding site plan that Faber created a couple months ago. So the zoning for the property is split between general business and mixed use. The building will go in that mixed use parcel in the front against LeBounty, and then the storage will happen behind the building. The use, which specializes in semi-truck sales, doesn't exactly fit perfectly in any zone, but staff felt that the general business zone was more appropriate for this business use. So the applicant is moving forward with a rezone to rezone that parcel from mixed use to general business. And then there's some other properties around there that make logical sense that'll be kind of jumping in on that rezone process.
Staff, I'm going to ask you the question I know that Circa's going to ask, is those sales tax dollars would remain in the city. That would be point of sales at the store, or they get delivered somewhere else?
generally speaking, these are point of sale, and the typical store of this type is approximately $1.4 million in sales tax per year.
And we're about a tenth of that. That's all right. Or one point in sales.
1.4 in sales is what was quoted to me.
So 1% of that would be your sales at about 14,000 or something like that. 1%. Very good. Thank you.
So I haven't seen Pepe this far north. Is this new for them to come into Whatcom County?
Yeah, I don't believe they're located in Whatcom County. I think the closest is it in Arlington? Is that what it said?
Yep. I think this one's their furthest north.
Yep. Okay. So they're just kind of coming up.
That's
up
very
the way.
Cool.
Yeah. So this is the picture of the specific binding site plan that Faber is proposing. This is currently under review as well, this legal separation of lots. The stars are where Pepe is going. And we have another proposal for Lot 4 that I'll bring to you guys in a couple months once it gets going. So this will be built out, I guess, in the next couple of years based on the tenants that they get. So we're working on recording that binding site plan in Faber as well. And this is a picture of the preliminary elevations that Pepe submitted, and in the mixed-use commercial zone and on sites along the general business zone that front public rights-of-way, there's design guidelines. So we're hoping to work with them. Oh, good job. To maybe revise the building to add some features to articulate the entrance. This looks a lot better, in our opinion, than the other elevations. And this is from Bakersfield, California. And we pasted this picture in our site plan review letter, and we're working directly with the Pepe rep just to make sure that the building looks nice. And from what we've heard, it's not a huge problem for them. We just kind of had to ask, and, you know, we've learned with design review, just asking for some coordination really does help, and we think it'll look a lot nicer with some of those features added. Okay, so the next project is it's a flood mitigation project associated with the new Timken building that was recently constructed on the old Triton Marine site. So the building footprint that was on site was actually expanded when the Timken building went in, and it's located within the 100-year floodplain. So when you fill within the floodplain, you're required to actually cut out the same amount in the general vicinity. So the idea is that when a flood occurs, if it hits the fill area, it'll just even out. So the idea is just no net rise in the flood levels. So what the applicant is proposing to do is to cut down in this property located south of Smith Road to mitigate for the Timken building. And they're required to do this before winter hits, so they should be doing this very soon once they get their permits. The next slide shows the probable wetland area, which is in dark blue, and then the FEMA 100-year floodplain that's kind of a turquoise color. And as you can see, this site, it's zoned manufacturing, but our maps indicate that nearly, like, most or the whole site is covered in wetlands. And on the next slide, you can see the delineation. So on the right-hand side, the yellow is actually the wetlands that they delineated on site. So it's not a very buildable site. There's a couple areas that you may place a building, but it would be overlapped within wetland buffers. So the developer purchased this for Timken, and the yellow hatched area is where they're digging the cut. And the biologist on staff recommended that they replant it after the cut occurs so that the buffer still functions as a buffer to the wetlands. So their long-term plan for this property is to mitigate for, do you want to go back maybe to the aerial photo? So south of the existing Timken building, a third building may be proposed. So it'll be kind of a Timken headquarters in Ferndale, which is super cool. There is a wetland that's located south of that building. You can kind of see the trees in that area. So the idea is that they may fill that wetland, which it's semi-isolated. It has roads on either side, and then mitigate the impacts on this site. So they purchased that site to kind of cover their impacts on these northern sites and cluster the buildings. So that's their plan for that parcel. And then they may have extra wetlands, I guess, left over per se that they enhance, and they could sell it to a third party that may need wetlands in the area too if they're filling isolated wetlands. So, yeah.
I'm confused. So this isn't a stormwater pond. It's just going to be a depression?
It's a flood cut mitigation measure. So when you fill the floodplain and the water hits it, like, the idea is that the water disperses even further and makes the floodplain, like, wider. So if you...
Even though it's relatively far away.
Right. It's within the same basin, so that does meet the requirements technically. So the idea is if you you know, dig out in a certain area, there's no net rise.
It's an inelegant approach to science. I think some would argue it's not scientific at all.
I would argue that.
But it's what FEMA says is an adequate mitigation measure.
Okay.
Either that, the water has to flow through the foundation.
Right. Yeah, and they can build that so it flows through too.
I will just push the I believe button and we can move on.
Right. So I think I'm done with this project. Last but not least, Fringe Brewing. I'm pretty excited about this project personally. It is a brewery that's located downtown.
We're all very excited.
Yeah, this flew through the approvals. No, it actually didn't. So this is a picture of the elevation. It's located down just outside of the urban core in the urban residential zone. It's located on the southeast portion of the 3rd Avenue and Alder Street intersection. It's zoned urban residential. Here's a picture of some of the elevations. So this building, it's attached to the Masonic Lodge, and this area is actually vacant right now. And it had a variety of uses before. It was a post office and then a police station, a library, and I think the most recent use was a CrossFit. The applicant is proposing to kind of redo the outside of the building and make it look nicer using a darker gray color and some red accents and then putting some planters out to kind of accentuate the building. So that's looking from 3rd, or that's looking from Alder. This is looking from 3rd. A garage door will be installed, and they'll open it up when there's nice weather. There's some outdoor seating, more planter boxes, some light fixtures, and then a sign on the building. And the next picture is just an aerial kind of looking down, and then the next photo is a site plan slash floor plan, so I'll kind of walk you through it. So on the inside, there is proposed bench seating, a small stage, tables, and a small bar area. Behind the seating area, they'll actually be brewing their own beers in the back, and then there's some accessible restrooms in the back to comply with the building codes. There's an outdoor seating area with a chained-in area, and then a food truck. So they're proposing to have kind of a rotating food truck. And I think what's cool about these business owners is they're pretty community-focused. They really want to put an emphasis on local businesses and have menus from restaurants in the surrounding area available there so the patrons can eat the food and bring it there. They'll have local food trucks. They want snacks from Hemplers and other names in the community. And then they're planning to donate any excess grains to local farmers and then even name some of the beverages after events in Ferndale, such as the log jam and the person who broke the log jam up. So they put a lot of thought into it, and they named it Fringe because it's on the outskirts of the brewery hub in Bellingham. So it should be a pretty cool business. Staff, I think, from all departments did a really good job working with these applicants, helping them through the process. They kind of tried to spearhead it on their own without professionals helping them, so it was a little bit of a bumpy road, and they ended up getting people to help them, and we kind of helped them every step of the way. They have their permits. They got them last week, and I asked them about their plans for opening, and they said, of course, ASAP. They're thinking November or December, doing a soft opening and then a public opening after they have their occupancy permits, of course. So that's what I have for you today.
Councilmember Kennedy.
What?
Quick question for you. What is that's pretty close to the elementary school. What is our buffer between a brewery and a kids' school?
We don't have buffers between those uses and the school.
They do meet. There is a buffer.
Oh, there is? Oh, I'm sorry, Fred.
But they do meet because it's the line walk of travel. It's not a straight line.
It's not a straight line. Okay, so we're good.
I think Cedars is closer.
I'm sorry, this will be
right about time this is opening up, we'll be through with our Woods Coffee cards if we can make a transition.
Keep the name.
Councilmember Watson.
So I was wondering, before we had talked about water issues in the sewer, are they going to be having to do anything special pre-treating their sewer?
Do you want to talk about that, Kevin?
Yeah, they have a solids trap, and we work with them to ensure that the design's going to be compatible with our system. So not a whole lot going on in there. There's no cooking that's going to be involved in it.
Just the brewing operation.
Yeah. Okay. We did work with them to make sure that their floor drains and everything were going to work out with the system.
Okay.
Yeah, interesting. Back when I was in La Conner, the La Conner Brewing Company came in, and that's when, this is, you know, 20 years ago when breweries just weren't that popular. And La Conner, being as small as it is, we were really concerned at first about the brewery and the impact it might have on our wastewater treatment plant. It really had no impact at all.
Okay, because we had talked about that before, something with the effluent coming out, that there would be some issue with the chemistry of our poo containers and stuff. Anyway. That's far more than we needed to talk about.
More questions of staff? Very good.
Thank you.
Good stuff going on. Thank you so much. And the last major item, really, is sign code revisions. Something we've been working on a long time, and I think we finally got to a place of wrapping this up, at least for now. Ms. Burnett, thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor. Good evening, City Council. Yori Burnett, Community Development Director. We have a public hearing for you for modifications to Chapter 18.80, specifically focusing on signs in the public right-of-way. As the mayor indicates, we've been talking about this really for about 3 or 4 years, if you date back to 2015, where U.S. Supreme Court decision basically upset the apple cart in terms of how jurisdictions regulated signs. The City Council and Planning Commission had discussed a lot of very significant changes to the sign code, very specific and prescriptive changes. And then the council directed staff to walk it back from the edge a little bit and to focus on the basic intent of the sign code. So what we've done is to say that within the public right-of-way, signs are limited to a certain size, and signs within the public right-of-way essentially cannot be hazardous, cannot be morally offensive, can't distract, and cannot be in an area that is typically maintained by the city. So that lays out the intent. Much fewer regulations on private property, because it is private property, we don't maintain it, and then some other clarification issues. The Planning and Land Use Committee held it in committee for a couple times as we made the amendments, but then forwarded on for the public hearing tonight. And I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Questions of a technical nature. This is a public hearing. Councilmember Watson.
There's one place. I think it's page 22. Was it Exhibit 2? That's the one we're focusing on, yes.
And I do have slightly different numbering on the pages, it looks like. But, yes, Exhibit 2.
This one was about signs prohibited on public right-of-way, and said unless otherwise protected by the constitutional right of free speech. I'm just, would my trinkets and treasures sign be my free speech?
I'm looking for the exact clause, but you've read it. That is somewhat of a legacy from when we first put the sign code in place, which basically said, was intended to be a nod that we understand that these are freedom of speech issues, and that that it is somewhat delicate. Certainly, I think that the city would enforce based on this sign code as written, but they would always have the ability to say, hold it, because of X or Y, we appeal that decision. It's a phrase that might not be necessary, because we are required, all of us, to uphold the U.S. Constitution, and it kind of goes without saying. So, again, I haven't found it. I believe that's the only case that it's mentioned.
It's 18.80.420.
If council preferred, I don't believe that it adds anything legally to the discussion, and it might actually confuse matters, implying that you just need to take out a freedom of speech card and we'll back off.
Pocket constitution, but
right.
Those are popular. More questions of staff before we open the public hearing, which I'm going to suspect to be about 4 seconds long. Just have a hunch. Guys, ready for the public hearing?
Yeah.
It will take longer to read the directions for the public hearing, but we will still do that.
So I'll read it fast. A public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Audience members who signed up prior to the beginning of our meeting will be called first to speak at this public hearing. If you were unable to sign up before the meeting, you will be given an opportunity to address the council once we've gotten through all the speakers listed on the hearing sheets. Each speaker should state his or her name and address for the record and will be given 3 minutes to address the council. When a large group of individuals supports the same position on an issue, we encourage the selection of one or two representatives to speak on behalf of the entire group.
Would anybody like to speak to the council on this ordinance on signs? As suspected, we will close the public hearing. Mr. Burnett, direction from council, please. What would you like to do? Councilmember Olson.
I'm not going to support this. I support what you've done, and I've already talked to you about this in committee, and I really appreciate all the tons of work you put into this, but to me, this is going to add to sign blight, and that's the reason I'm not supporting it. But I just wanted you to know I appreciated what you did.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Councilmember Taylor.
Motion to approve Agenda Bill 1810-009.
Second.
Moved by Councilmember Taylor. Seconded by Councilmember Greg Hansen to adopt the sign ordinance as brought forth by staff. Discussion. Councilmember Watson.
I'm just curious, a couple places it mentions that you can have a sign, but if they do not impair the ability of the city to maintain any part of the public right-of-way. I'm just curious, who's going to determine if it's impairing, and I mean, what is impairing in your view?
It would be the public works director or their designee, which would most likely be the crew supervisor or foreman, who would be making that call. We're about to mow this, and there's a sign where it's preventing us from mowing it. And I think that will probably be the most common example. It is mowing. I would expect that after this is adopted, that the public works director, possibly the city attorney, and possibly I will remind them that this is not a license, not that they would, but not a license just to remove all signs within a right-of-way. Otherwise, it would have stated that. And that if there is something truly impairing the maintenance versus if there was something where it was, for instance, stuck in a chip pile or something like that, that there is a little bit of discretion or context-based decision-making that needs to take place. And I think that it probably would vary throughout the course of the year, but ultimately it's going to be the folks who are maintaining that are going to make that decision.
I mean, I'm not going to support it, but for the opposite reason, I think we've banned some things. I don't understand the banning of the feather banners, but I think the majority of council wants to ban the feather banners. I'm not sure why. And I really think the impairing confuses things, because if I'm doing the farmer's market, I shouldn't put it in the grass because it's mowing season. But if I'm doing trinkets and treasures, I can't, because mowing season is done. I think we did a lot more than we needed to just to do the Supreme Court. But I do appreciate all the work you put into it. Planning Commission, too.
Thank you.
More questions from council? So you have the motion. I don't hear any amendments to the motion. Since I don't hear any, we already call for the question. All in favor of the ordinance as brought forth by staff, say aye.
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 Opposed, nay.
Nay.
Nay from Council Members Olson and Council Member Watson. The mayor is grateful. The mayor's charge of keeping the laws. This is one of the few laws we've asked staff not to enforce other than life safety. And this is something at least is reasonably enforceable for the city. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Council.
Thank you. Moving on to mayor reports. I have none, and so I'd like to pass it over. I believe Council Member Watson has a humble hometown hero or two. So we'll go on to council reports, starting with Council Member Watson.
And I'll pass it around. On this date, Louise Underwood is recognized for her years of service to the Ferndale community. A few Ferndale residents know her name. For more than 10 years, Louise Underwood has led the Outer Bank, working tirelessly to provide low-income residents of the Ferndale School District with the daily hygiene supplies most of us take for granted. Her team of 9 volunteers worked more than 500 hours in 2017, serving 3,435 children and their parents with donated shampoo, soap, diapers, toothpaste, etc., and helping an average of 64 families per month. Louisa Underwood epitomizes the anonymous, hardworking heroes every strong community needs, and we are proud to put her name in the record as a true, humble hometown hero.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
More council reports? Seeing none. Staff report, community development director?
None. Well, I don't know if Charlie's going to talk about it, but if he's not,
He probably will anyway. So I'll make it short. I think that Riley deserves a lot of credit, as does Bo, Kyla, and Susan for a flood certification video that we put out on pretty short notice for our flood certification that Haley worked on, which reduces the flood insurance rate for insurance by 15% for all property owners within the city of Ferndale. So what we did is we put together a video really talking about the Nooksack River, how it floods, and Riley did a really professional job of kind of corralling all of us together. So you'll see it
tomorrow.
Thank you both, you guys.
I have one update.
Go ahead.
23rd of October, Tuesday, at 5 o'clock at Moles, there'll be a Ferndale Downtown Merchant Mingle.
We will all mingle, whatever that means.
Come and mingle.
Thank you, Council Member.
Mm-hmm.
Public Works.
I have none.
Finance. City Clerk?
Nothing.
Communication and Parks and whatever else you do.
Yeah, et cetera. I want to thank Council Member Czar for her help with our showing of Hocus Pocus last Friday. We had over 400 people show up. We were pushing the capacity of the room and ran out of popcorn, but it was a big hit and went off pretty well. So thank you, Council Member Czar, for your help. We will be doing one last parks event. We wanted to squeeze in a exercise event before the end of the year. So we have Turbo Kick with Jackie and Amanda, November 17th, 11 a.m. at the Pioneer Pavilion of Everyday Fitness. That will be a free exercise event. So work off those calories before Thanksgiving. I look forward to seeing you all there because I don't skip leg day. And then, of course, we have our downtown trick-or-treat on Saturday, the 27th, from 3 to 7 on Main Street. And then, of course, we are doing the Haunted Park again. It's a great time to ooh and awe over those sidewalks on your way to the barn, where they're doing a light scare from 5 to 7, which I call a city council meeting, or a heavy scare. We call those executive session from 7 to 9. Thank you.
Our city administrator and chief of police. I would love to hear a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Okay, we're done tonight.